Hi, everyone. I'm now going to talk about some of the vocabulary words and phrases that were used in the conversation between Dan and Aaron about how little things can have big effects. And the very first one is hindsight is 20/20. This is kind of an idiom that is used quite frequently. If you haven't heard it before, I think you will start to recognize it from now on. And basically, what it means is that it's very easy to know the right thing to do after something has happened. Like looking back in the past, it's very easy to know what the best way to proceed would have been. But it is very hard to predict the future. So in the moment, we sometimes are presented with choices of how to act or what decisions to make, and we don't always know what the best thing to do is. But looking back, it's very easy to see what the best things to do would have been or what the right decision to make would have been. So hind, if you ever see this, hind, it refers to behind or in back of. And so if we're talking about time, it's the past. And then 2020 is actually, that comes from eye exams. It refers to sight, seeing, the ability of your eyes to see well. If you go to the doctor and get your eyes checked, if your vision is perfect, if you have no problems seeing things, then the doctor writes down 20/20. So it's a measurement of how well you can see. So when we say hindsight is 20/20, what we're actually saying is it's very easy to look at the past and see clearly, to see what should have been done. So how would we use this? Well, I think a good example might be the stock market, if we're talking about purchasing and selling stocks, because people buy stocks with the intent to make money. They think a stock will go up, so you buy it low and you sell it high. Well, stock prices are influenced by circumstances that happen in life, natural disasters and decisions that are made in government and the ebb and flow of the business world. So it's really hard to predict if a stock is going to go up or down. And you may lose money thinking that you're going to make money, and vice versa. But when we look back, we can very easily see how certain events caused a stock to go up or down. So we can, when we're talking about the stock market, we can easily say, yeah, hindsight is 20/20. I should have sold instead of kept that stock, right? Otherwise, I wouldn't have lost so much money like this. Now, in our conversation, we're talking about, it's easy to look back and see that had the art school accepted Adolf Hitler, that maybe he never would have become this notorious war criminal that he became. And so only if they had accepted him into art school, it could have changed history forever. Yeah, well, hindsight is 20/20, right? It's easy to look back and say that. But in the moment, who knows? Things are more complicated. Okay, let's move on. The next one is quandary. Dan talks about the time machine quandary. So if you could go back in time and kill Adolf Hitler, would you do it? So a quandary is basically, a very difficult situation. It's a predicament. It's a dilemma, a state of uncertainty. It's a very difficult decision to make, right? Now, for some people, it's not a quandary. They would very easily decide, oh, yes, of course, I would kill Hitler, go back in time, kill him, and then maybe that would save the lives of 6 million Jews or however many millions that his regime was responsible for killing. So, but for others, it's a moral quandary. You know, should we be solving problems by killing? And if you go back in time and you do kill him, what if that led to the rise of someone else that came into power who was far worse and who actually did take over the world? And so This is why he calls it a quandary, because it's really not such an easy decision to make. Of course, nobody wants to kill people. If you are a very normal, moral, ethical human being, you're not interested in killing people. So it becomes a quandary. Should you do something that you're morally against in order to save the lives of other people? Okay, that's a quandary. There are many kinds of quandaries out there. I mean, we're faced with them all the time. Right now in the United States, an election is happening, a presidential election, and many voters are in a quandary because they dislike both of the major candidates. And yet, if they can't bring themselves to vote for one, but then if they don't vote, if they stay home, then they're not exercising their right to vote. They're giving up on democracy. So it's a quandary. What should I do? Should I vote or for someone I dislike, or should I not vote at all, or is there a third option? What should I do? That's a quandary. Okay, do you have any quandaries in your life? Let's move on to the next one. Got a thing about. Got a thing about. Dan, we're talking about killing, and this Dan mentions to Aaron, he says, "Hey, you won't even kill a mosquito. Is that true? Didn't you once tell me that you got a thing about killing bugs?" So to have a thing about, to got a thing about, he's got a thing about, he has a thing about, she has a thing about, she's got a thing about. This basically means that you have some sort of quirk or hang up about a thing that is not the norm. It's not what normal, you know, it's not what most people have. So for example, I know a guy who's got a thing about public transportation. And what that means is he's got a thing about it. He won't take the subway. He won't take the bus. He'll either walk or he will drive his own car. He just won't get on public transportation. He's afraid of getting sick. He doesn't like the feeling of being around so many strangers. He's got a thing about it. Now, that's not completely normal. I mean, most people, it doesn't bother them to take public transportation. I know another woman who's got a thing about cleanliness. Everything has to be very clean and orderly around her. Otherwise, she gets very uncomfortable and she has to arrange things around her. So if you go to her house, you can see everything is in perfect order. And if you place something out of order, she cannot help herself but to come over and fix it, put it back into order. And then she feels comfortable again. That's not completely the normal way that people do things. Not that there's anything wrong with it. I'm not saying it's wrong or bad. It's just that she's got a thing about it. She's got a thing about cleanliness, right? It's important to her. So Dan's saying that I have a thing about killing bugs. And yeah, I do have a little thing about, I don't like to kill things as a means of solving problems. So if there's a mosquito in my house, yeah, it's inconvenient. I don't like it. I don't want to be bitten, but I'm not going to kill it. I'll either catch it and put it outside, or if it's a cockroach, I'll sweep it up and throw it out. I got a thing about it. I just don't like to kill things. But I will. I will kill it. If there are too many cockroaches, I'll set a cockroach trap. And if there are too many mosquitoes, then I need to do something about it because it's endangering my health. So what do you have a thing about? Do you got any things going on in your life? Do you have a thing about food or animals or weather? I'm sure everybody has a thing about something. All right, next one is that ain't gonna happen. That ain't gonna happen. So we're talking about the time machine, and because I have a thing about killing bugs, Dan says, you don't get the keys of the time machine because you can't kill Hitler. That ain't gonna happen. Right? You're not getting the keys to the time machine. That ain't going to happen. And ain't means is not. That is not. And then gonna is kind of a short way of saying going to. So that is not going to happen. That ain't going to happen. Ain't, that word, that contraction ain't, means is not. And I do not recommend using that frequently because it's just a very, very casual. It's actually part of almost a dialect of the Southern dialect. And, you should use is not that or isn't, try not to use ain't. It just doesn't sound, I don't know. It carries connotations that are not always positive. So, but for a native speaker, in certain situations, it's okay to say that ain't going to happen. It has a very casual feel to it. And of course, gonna is also something you should not say unless you happen to speak very quickly and fluently, because gonna does not sound natural if it's spoken slowly and if your English is not so fluent. So you should say something like, that isn't going to happen. That isn't going to happen. But if you can speak quickly, that ain't going to happen. Then that sounds nice. That sounds okay. It's just very, very casual. I wouldn't say that in a formal situation. All right, moving on. Speciesism. I was talking about how gorillas or chimpanzees, I can't remember what it was, had painted some paintings. And they showed those paintings to some art critics. And the art critics, quite a few of them, had really nice things to say about the paintings, thinking that a human had done them. And it turned out that they were actually done by apes or monkeys. And I say that, so I don't trust art critics, because, you know, they can't even tell the difference between a human's painting and a monkey's painting. And of course, I'm being facetious. I don't really believe that. I'm just kind of joking around with Dan, and Dan's joking back with me, and he says, hey, that's speciesism or racism. It's not really racism, because we're not the same. I mean, we're different species. And so basically what he's talking about is a prejudice or some kind of oppressive belief about something, as racism would be, sexism would be, classism, ageism. There are all kinds of isms out there. And when you attach the suffix ism, ism, to any sort of noun, or, I mean, it basically refers to some kind of set of principles or practices or ideologies. Okay, so for example, a practice like plagiarism, right, or criticism. It could be like a state or a condition like alcoholism, or maybe some doctrine of belief like Buddhism or Hinduism or Judaism, like a religious belief. But in this case, we're talking about a prejudice, racism, sexism, right? And so what Dan does, and this is the interesting part, there is no such thing as speciesism. He makes it up in the moment. And this is one of the cool things about English, is that you can take a suffix and you can attach it to a noun and create a totally, you know, new word. If nobody ever says speciesism, but he just made it up on the spot. And you'll notice sometimes native speakers will do things like this if they need a word that doesn't exist. So I don't think I've ever heard anyone say speciesism before. That's a first for me. Okay, let's move on. House of Cards is the next one. House of Cards. We're talking about Richard Nixon. And Dan says, yeah, he was really ripe to be taken down. Ripe to be taken down. Ready to be taken down. And I say, yeah, he was a house of cards. He really was a house of cards. So I think you can guess the meaning of this. I mean, if you imagine a house made of playing cards, wow, so easy to knock that down. The very slightest, even a little change in the breeze or the slightest touch can knock the entire thing down. And so usually we use this phrase to refer to like a building or a structure or an organization or some kind of plan or argument that is just doesn't have a good foundation at all. And it's ready to collapse. It's very easy to knock it down. So you might say, yeah, there's a building down the street. It's 70 years old. It's never been repaired. It's a real house of cards. I wouldn't go in there if I were you. Or, yeah, this guy at work, he has this big plan to make big changes in the structure of our organization, but it's a real house of cards. It's really not well planned out, and it would fail for sure. It's a house of cards. But now we're talking about Richard Nixon and how, you know, he had done so many kind of sneaky and illegal and crooked things that, you know, that one little piece of tape brought him down. But what we're trying to say is that he was a house of cards, meaning that if it wasn't that piece of tape, it would have been something else, something small that would have revealed all of these things that he'd done. So we don't usually refer to people that way, but I did in this instance. So he was a house of cards. He was ready to come down. All right, let's move to the next one. Stick it to the man. Stick it to the man. Dan, we're talking, of course, about Nixon still. And, you know, he says that a lot of people mistrust government, not just from Nixon, but that is a prime example of how you cannot trust the man. And I say, yeah, right, stick it to the man. Now, if you've never heard this before, you might think that when Dan says the man, that he's talking about Richard Nixon, but he's not. What he's talking about is authority, power. You cannot trust the man. Not Richard Nixon, the U.S. government, or, you know, the boss of your company, or the, you know, local government, or the police organization, or something. All the authority, the powers that be in your life, that is the man. Okay? So anything that could potentially oppress you, or that sets laws or rules that control your life, that limit your freedom, that is the man. So he's saying that, you know, this whole situation about how the president of the United States misled people and, you know, broke into an apartment and had a lot of secret dealings. This is a good example. You can't trust the man. You can't trust government. You can't trust the powers that be. Okay. And I say, right, stick it to the man. Now, what does that mean? Actually, in this case, it's kind of an association. I hear Dan say the man, and then I think of this phrase, stick it to the man, which is a phrase you'll sometimes hear. And it basically means don't allow corrupt power to limit your freedom. You should speak out against it. You should fight the power. You should, you know, hold those in power accountable for their actions, and power should be transparent, and you should demand that transparency. Stick it to the man. Don't let the man hold you down. So all these kind of things. A lot of protesters and people who go out and they protest in the streets, they're trying to stick it to the man. Not all of them, but, you know, a lot of them are trying to say no to the powers that be that are limiting their freedoms. So have you ever stuck it to the man? And who is the man in your life? Who's the man in your life? Are you the man? So anyway, that's what the man means. It doesn't refer to Richard Nixon. It refers to power and authority. Okay, a couple of more. We're going to move on quickly here. Rub off on. Rub off on. Here's a nice phrasal verb. Rub off on. What does that mean? Well, Dan's talking about how a lot of people distrusted Bill Clinton and called him Slick Willie. And then he says, I think a lot of that is rubbed off on Hillary Clinton. And basically, to rub off on means to, if you imagine the act of rubbing, which you do like with a rag to polish something. And when you polish something, you're taking off, you know, the outer layer. Maybe it's a color, maybe it's rust, maybe it's dirt. And to rub off onto something else means to kind of transfer that dirty thing or that thing that you're trying to get rid of, and it goes on to something else. Now, it doesn't always have to be a negative, dirty thing. It can also be a very positive meaning. But it basically means that whatever you're associated with can rub off onto you, whether it's an idea or a practice or a stigma or a reputation, that kind of thing. So what he's saying is, because Hillary Clinton was married to Bill Clinton and she's associated with him, some of the things that Bill Clinton did have naturally transferred to her. So when people see her and hear her speak, they think of Bill Clinton as well. So he's saying that's rubbed off on Hillary Clinton. Ideas can rub off on you. For example, if you spend a lot of time reading novels by a particular author, then that person's ideas can rub off on you. You might start, you know, incorporating those ideas into the decisions that you make in life or in the conversations that you have with other people. Habits can rub off on you. I mean, I've been in Japan for a very, very long time, and a lot of the Japanese cultural, you know, mannerisms and ways of being from in day-to-day life have rubbed off on me. So when I go back to the United States, I find myself, you know, nodding my head in a very Japanese way when I'm talking to people. And some of my friends notice it and they say, "Hey, what are you doing?" And it's, "Oh, I didn't realize I was doing that." I guess some of those habits have rubbed off on me. So, yeah. So it just means to be influenced by something else through association or through, you know, immersion in a particular state of affairs. Okay, the very last one, whip out. Here's another phrasal verb, whip out. Now, first of all, a whip. A whip is, you know, a very long piece of leather or string or some kind of long material that you use to strike or hit something else. We think of a horse whip. So you use it to whip a horse to make the horse run faster. Animal trainers use whips to keep the animals in line or to get the animal to do something it doesn't want to do. Cowboys use whips to whip the cattle. So anyway, that's what a whip is. So you imagine something that's very quick and very fast and has a cracking sound to it, a surprising sound. And to whip out has nothing to do with actually whipping, but to do something very quickly, to take something out from a bag or from your pocket or from the inside of your jacket, you can whip it out, take it out very quickly. So what we're talking about is Roosevelt and how this speech that he had in his breast pocket saved his life by stopping a bullet that otherwise would have killed him. And people didn't believe it. And he actually whipped it out and showed them this long-winded speech with a hole in it. Right? So that's the proof. He whipped it out and proved that he had been shot. And of course, he was bleeding as well. Some other examples of how you might use this. I was asked to donate some money recently, and I happened to be carrying a little bit of cash with me, so I whipped out my wallet and I donated on the spot. You know, I gave them 1,000 yen, which is about $10. A police officer sometimes has to whip out her gun in dangerous situations. Recently, I was walking down the street and I heard a very strange noise and I looked over, but it was really dark. So I whipped out a flashlight and I shined it over to my left and I saw a tanuki, which is like a wild dog-like creature in Japan. In the night, right? His eyes were shining. So to whip out, just take out quickly like this. All right, guys, this is the end of the vocab commentary. I hope you have found something useful here that you can apply in your conversations and daily life. All right, if you have further questions, please do leave them in our discussion forum, or you can email us at members@deepenglish.com, and we'll try our best to get right back to you. All right, guys, have a good day.